Little Fleetwood Mac. Don't stop thinking about tomorrow. Seems like a good way to get into the program today, although I think that song is actually about a breakup. But Christine Whalen, our guest today, we're going to talk about New Year's resolutions. You know, it's one thing to set them. It's another thing to stick to them. And it's another to find your purpose in life and take your steps toward achieving those purposes. And that's something we're going to talk about, too, with Christine Whalen, a fellow at back with us after a long, you know, 7 or 8 years, I think, the last time, Christine, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's great to be back.
It's great to have you. She is UW-Madison's Center, a fellow at UW-Madison's Center for Healthy Minds, and the Purpose Professor at the Emory University's College of Arts and Sciences in Atlanta, Georgia. And she's the author of 5 books, I believe. The one that comes immediately to mind is The Big Picture, A Guide to Finding Your Purpose in Life. And as we talk with Christine, I hope you'll join in today. How are you doing with your New Year's resolutions? Have you thought about purpose? I think most of us do at some point, typically as we get a little older, and sometimes, I think. Sometimes when we're just young and just getting started, there's a big middle part there where we may lose it. I don't know. I'm going to ask her about it. You can join in with your thoughts. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or email to talk@wpr.org. Well, Christine, it's good to see you again.
It's great to be here.
Well, resolution. Let's start with resolutions. Mm-hmm. Here we are near the end of January. Many of us have made New Year's resolutions, made them a few weeks ago. Why do we do it?
Well, resolutions are sort of a hopeful idea for the future, right?
Yep.
We could all use to be a little better in our lives.
Yep.
And when we make a resolution, we're saying, gosh, we hope that we can achieve a better version of ourselves. But, of course, life gets in the way.
Yeah.
And our best laid plans often don't work. And part of the reason why they often don't work is because we are so hopeful about being better versions of ourselves that we end up being too hopeful. We, instead of setting 1 or 2 New Year's resolutions, we set 10 or 20 New Year's resolutions. And we fall by the wayside because we try to change too many things at once. So when we try to change too many things, often we just can't do it, and then we give up on all of them.
So, the most common ones, lose weight, I think, is one.
Lose weight, exercise more, eat better, get more sleep, stop drinking, all of those things. And we tend to give up on all of those about, 10, 15 days into the new year. So if you are one of the many people who has stopped going to the gym, started eating snacks again, stopped your abstinence or dry January, you are not alone. Now, this is not to say that all of those aren't wonderful things to try to do. It's just that you might not try to do all of them all at once. And you also might want to ask yourself the larger question of why. So why is it that you want to lose weight? Why is it that you want to go to the gym? And if it is because you feel like you should or because somebody else wants you to, then you are actually much less likely to do those things and to follow through than if it comes from an underlying value or something that you want to do for yourself. It turns out that when you actually want to do something, you're far more likely to do it. And I know that sounds so obvious, and yet lots of time, we try to make ourselves do a whole lot of things that we actually don't want to do, and then we don't actually do it.
I was thinking about my own resolutions. One I make every year is to map my run goal. Mm-hmm. It's 1,025 kilometers for the year.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I like about it is that if I miss you know, like it was 35 below a wind chill last week, I didn't go out. I didn't do my two, three miles in the morning, which I do pretty much every morning. But I didn't worry about it because I've got that goal, and I'm sure that I'm going to reach that goal because there'll be other days when I do twice as much.
Excellent. All right. So you see it as a larger motivation. All right.
Yeah.
And so this is where personality comes in, right? So you see that as a larger motivation. So I'm a little bit different. So my husband and I decided last year, actually, and we're doing it again this year, that we're doing a sort of modified 75 hard, which is for 75 days at the beginning of the year, we've committed to all sorts of things. but one of the things we're committed to doing is a 45-minute outdoor walk. It's supposed to be outdoor, like full exercise, but for us, it's really just a walk. Every day, no matter what the weather. So when it was negative 13 below, real temperature, negative 35 wind chill, we still went out for 45-minute walk. It did require Vaseline on our faces because, you know, we didn't want to get frostbite. But we did it for 45 minutes because we had committed to it. And we have pictures to prove it because, you know... street cred, right? And we did it, and that was great. And so that was one of those resolutions that actually encouraged us to meet our goals because we were doing it together. And but you know what? Here's the secret. It's because we love to walk.
Yeah.
And we wanted to do it. We weren't doing it because someone else wanted us to do it or because we thought we should. We actually really want to do it. And so we made the commitment to encourage us to do something that we wanted to do already.
Yeah, and I like to go, you know, I get up at 20 to 6 in the morning, and I go out every morning.
Exactly, and you're going to want to do a little extra on those other days to meet your goal.
Oh, yeah.
See, so it's kind of a personality thing, whether which way you want to do it. But either way, we're both doing something that we want to do, so we'll achieve our goal.
And I can't, it's not cheating really, but I know that I play golf, so I know, and I walk.
Mm-hmm. You're
so
going to get it in there.
6 mile walk every time I go out. So there you go.
There you go.
It doesn't take long to build up those kilometers, those miles when you're doing things that you enjoy.
Exactly. That, to me, is really the key. And so often when we, quote unquote, fail on our resolutions, it's because we're kind of beating ourselves up into trying to do something that are actually other people's goals for us. And, you know, so much of life is like that. And, you know, this is a very simple thing. And when I teach it to my students, they often kind of look at me like I'm Captain Obvious. Obviously, you are going to be more likely to do things you want to do. And yet so much of our lives are spent trying to get ourselves to do these things that other people tell us we should want to do.
And that's probably the problem with resolutions, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. It really is. So think about the things that you both want to do and are good for you, and try to match those things together, and you're much more likely to have a successful New Year's resolution. And by the way, if your first New Year's resolutions didn't work so well for you, Lunar New Year is coming up. I always think of this
Wednesday.
As a second shot on goal, folks. This is your next attempt at having some successful resolutions. I really love this about the way our resolution system is set up. So you have another chance to make resolutions that can really stick.
So let's say we didn't make it on the New Year's, the new one.
Mm-hmm.
What about come March? Is there any reason why we can't...
can't start again in March? No, of course not. I think pick any day. Pick a Monday. Pick March 1st. Pick whatever day works for you. One of the things that I would imagine most people have had this experience in their lives, when you make a decision, it's like something sort of changes inside of you and you say, I am going to make this change in my life. It's as if the change has already happened. The shift happens in you. Have you ever had that experience?
Yeah. Yes.
That's because there are stages of behavior change. And a lot of the behavior change actually happens in what researchers would call the pre-contemplation stage of behavior change, where you're actually thinking about it. You're thinking about what it's going to take. Then there is that stage where you are going to take action. You're going to do something, and then you've got to make sure that the action sticks over a period of time. Sometimes you'll backslide a little bit, and then you've got to keep the behavior change going. You've got to sort of keep it in place and maintain it. But we discount that pre-contemplation phase where it looks like you're doing nothing, but you're actually really thinking about it. And then once that decision is made, the change can happen.
Actually, that's what happened with me many years ago when I learned about Map My Run. Mm. It was 8 years ago, 9 years ago. And I thought about that. Could I really do that? I really would like to do that. I want to do that. And then I did it. And so, 8 years, that's probably about 10,000 kilometers more than I would have done had I not started.
And that feels good, doesn't it?
Now that I think about it, that's the first I've really thought about it that way.
So this is the power. So for all of those folks listening out there who think, gosh, I haven't done anything, you may be in the pre-contemplation phase of your behavior change. And you may be in the contemplation phase where you're thinking about making that change. You're thinking about it. You're getting ready. And then when you make the decision, boom.
Yeah, there you go.
It's as good as done.
Christine Whalen, our guest today, clinical professor in the UW-Madison School of Human Ecology. She's authored 5 books. And the one that I'm thinking of, The Big Picture, A Guide to Finding Your Purpose in Life, was published in 2016, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And she teaches classes on happiness and well-being and is also the founding director of Money, Relationships, and Equality Initiative. So it's great to have her with us. Questions, comments, or maybe an experience to share, I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 800-642-1234, or you could email us to talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Miller for WPR News. Talking about resolutions, and we're zeroing in on happiness and finding purpose in your life with our guest. And I kind of gave you the wrong title for her just about 2 minutes ago, so let me retell you what her title is. She's a fellow at UW-Madison Center for Healthy Minds and the Purpose Professor at Emory University's College of Arts and Sciences in Atlanta, Georgia. So it's great to have Christine back with us. She was first here in 2017, and now she's back. And you know, Christine, you are known as the happiness professor. How did you get that label?
I am so fortunate. I have these 2 titles. I am the happiness professor and the purpose professor. No pressure, right?
No pressure.
So I was known as the happiness professor because for 10 years, I taught a class at UW-Madison called Consuming Happiness, about how we try to buy happiness successfully and unsuccessfully in the market economy. And my students dubbed me the happiness professor. But there was a little bit of a catch, because happiness is one of my least favorite words.
It is.
Because what does it actually mean? You know, everybody has a different definition for happiness. You can define happiness as joy, or you can define happiness as pleasure. You can define happiness as satisfaction, or you can define happiness as, as friendship and family, as good times, as the hedonic or as the eudaimonic. It's kind of like it's a catch-all phrase for so many different feelings. And so when I would teach, I would ask my students to give me a synonym for happiness, and there would be all sorts, and all would be correct. So the challenge here, of course, is if you're going to try to use your limited resources of time and money to try to go get happiness, but we define it in all sorts of different ways, then actually do that. And so one of the things that I would suggest to everybody is really, rather than going after happiness, really what we're looking for is a life of purpose and meaning. We're looking for a life of thriving. And happiness is actually the byproduct of a life of thriving and a life of purpose and a life of meaning. So the idea is that when you live out your values, when you live out a life that matters to you, well, then you are living a life that makes you happy. But if you are actually just seeking a life of happiness and pleasure and satisfaction, then you may not actually find it. But if you are seeking to use your gifts in keeping with your values to make others happy, to build something that matters to you, well, then happiness may find you along the way.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking about the TV series Landman. I don't know if you've watched it.
No, I haven't. Is it new? Is it old?
It's a new series, and it's about really explores how different family experiences shape the lives of its characters, and it's in oil country.
Okay.
And so it's very interesting. And when you were talking about that, immediately what popped into my mind was Jerry Jones, who's the owner of the Dallas Cowboys. And there's one really, they had him come on the show and play himself. And he's talking to one of the characters who's in the hospital, laying there with a bad heart condition. But he talks about the time spent with his family, how he started his business so that he could be with his children. And then he got his children involved in all parts of his business. And so he says, I did it for, I thought I was doing it for my children, but it was really for myself. And this apparently was he was told to do this off the cuff. And he just gives the most striking summary of maybe a purposeful life.
Oh, that's beautiful. I'll watch that.
Yeah, watch the whole thing. There are if you go online and type in Jerry Jones, you'll see some versions that are like shortened up a minute or two. But he talks for about 3 minutes just off the top of his head about his life. And I think it's what he's saying is what you were just talking about.
How wonderful. Yeah.
It was an actual. It was really from his own heart, and I thought Jerry Jones.
Who would have thought? Yeah.
who would have thought? So you have to look that up, and you might even that'd be one. If you're teaching another class, that might be one you would want to do. Why is it so difficult for people to find happiness or maybe purpose?
Well, there's a wonderful story of a teacher who wanted to kind of illustrate this for her students. And the way she did it was she gathered a bunch of her elementary school students. She handed them each a balloon and a Sharpie marker and said, "All right, kids, write your name on a balloon." So they all did. And she said, "Now we're going to go into the hallway." And she had them throw all of their balloons into the hallway. So you can imagine a bunch of little kids, all sorts of balloons, all mixed up down the hallway. And she said, "All right, now you have 30 seconds. Go find your balloon." So all these little kids go running down the hallway, elbowing each other out of the way, frantically trying to find their balloons. After 30 seconds, nobody can find their balloons. She says, "Okay, fine, stop. Now, everybody grab the balloon closest to you." And so they all do. And she says, "Now you have 30 seconds. Go give the balloon to the person whose name is on it. You have 30 seconds to do so." And in less than 30 seconds, everyone had their balloon back.
Oh, my goodness.
And the teacher says, now, these balloons are like your happiness. If you're only looking for your own, you'll never find it. But if you give this your happiness, give happiness to somebody else, then not only will you help them find theirs, but you will get yours in return. And so what this teacher was trying to teach her students was a lesson of pro-social behavior. And pro-social behavior is about sharing with others. It's about giving of yourself, but not only in a totally selfless way. And this is what I think is a really important thing to know, is that when you are acting in community with others, it's not always about being totally selfless. It's about giving of yourself and getting in return. And so when I talk about happiness and purpose, I do talk about being in community with others and sharing. But there's quite a bit of sort of, you know, smart selfishness involved in this as well. And so I encourage people to think about happiness and purpose as the idea of a sort of a give and a take, and and using your gifts, what you're good at, in keeping with your values, what you care about most, to make a positive impact on not only yourself, but on the world around you, on the people, on the causes, on the communities that you care about most.
Boy, Joanne in Appleton emailed to say that Joanne recently completed an online course that dealt with behavior that makes people happier, and wonders if doing that is made more difficult while we're making daily compromises on our own goals.
Yes. So that is an excellent, excellent point. So one of the sort of core tensions in our individual lives, in our world, is the tension between individualism and community, between me and we. So if you are all about me, 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 then yes, you will accomplish your own goals, but only up to a certain point, because if you're an island unto yourself, you can only accomplish so much, right? You do need a team. You do need others to accomplish more than a certain thing. If you are always focused on the we and giving of yourself and only paying attention to other people, then you never accomplish any of your own goals, because you're always accomplishing other people's goals and you're always selfless. And that's not great either. So the balance is when to focus on your own stuff, when to give of yourself to others. We see this in our own lives, we see this in our family lives, but by the way, we also see this in our nation. We see this in our government. This is the fight between states' rights and federal rights, yeah. Right? I mean, we see this worldwide between nations and global citizenship as well. So how do we find the right balance? It's something that we all have to continually negotiate. And it's a worthy balance to try to negotiate. It can't be one or the other.
Will in Seymour has something that may relate to what we were just talking about here. Will, thank you for calling.
Hey, Larry, thanks for having me.
Sure.
So listening to your program today, a lot of the things that I'm hearing, it sounds like a dead ringer for some of the ideas in the principles of motivational interviewing is what it's called. And I had been exposed to this through a course that was actually, it originated in our state's National Guard for the soldiers and airmen there.
Yeah.
as a way to equip leaders with tools to help build that motivation for their servicemen. And one of the main ideas was that to really make that lasting change, you need that motivation to come from within, have intrinsic motivation. So the way that the principles of it were, you had engaging, so you get to know a person, you have evoking, so you're building the emotions for getting that change, imagining yourself making a positive change. That'd be third. You have focusing, you're finding things that you need to change, and then all the way at the end is planning. And I think a lot of people want to make a plan first without really having an emotional connection to the change that they're trying to make. And without having, you know, without your soul really being into it, without having that enthusiasm for it, you're usually pretty destined to fail. So it's, I'm glad to hear more focus on this and stuff. And it seems like it's growing in popularity over time throughout the world here.
Well, Will, thank you so much for calling. Christine, comments here.
Absolutely. Oh, Will, that is such a fantastic feedback, and I'm thrilled to hear that this is being used everywhere. This is so wonderful. You know, the way I phrase it is the importance of asking why it matters before how to make it happen. And so why is the purpose and how are the goals? Right? So you ask why it matters. So what is the purpose of any change that you're going to make in your life? And then the goals are really the step-by-step of how to put it into action. And as you said, all too often, we jump into the goals. We jump into the what do I need to do? What do I need to change? And we often, I hate even to say that we often fail, because it's really almost not even a failure. We often just don't follow through on our goals because they don't matter to us. We haven't figured out why they matter, and they actually may not matter to us, so we don't follow through. And yet then we blame ourselves as if we have failed when we just didn't do them because they don't matter.
Will, thank you again for calling. Christine Whalen, our guest today, as we talk with her about resolutions, about goals, about purpose, finding purpose. You can join in, too. I hope you have a question or comment. The number is 800-642-1234, or email to talk@wpr.org. Give a call. We'll get you on pretty quickly. Vivian emailed, how much should we rely on family members or friends to help us, or should we be prepared to go it alone?
It's wonderful to get feedback from other people, as long as you understand that everybody comes with their own perspective. So the people who know us the best certainly can offer really useful advice. They also will come with a sense of who they want us to be, where we fit into their system. And so you want it to, I'm being very delicate here, right? You want to take everything with a grain of salt, right? And so if it's helpful advice, take it. If it's advice that doesn't feel right for you at the time, thank them for it and hold it loosely. I would also very much recommend gathering all of the advice of a variety of different people, and then seeing whether the advice clusters around a particular point, because then, you know, if you have three people who are saying all the same thing, even if you don't like it, it's worth listening to.
You know, there was the 2024 World Happiness Report.
Mm-hmm.
Young Americans ranked 62nd happiest compared with people in 142 other countries.
Yeah.
Why is that?
As with all things, it's complicated. So the first thing is the way that that these reports are measured. So they use what's called a Cantrell ladder to measure the happiness of various nations. And so what they're asking is a comparative happiness to other people. So they ask you to imagine a ladder where there are various rungs, and you can which rung do you imagine yourself on? So this automatically creates a visual that somebody is above you and somebody is below you. So given that visual, you then have to say, do you think that you are on the top of the ladder, or are you one rung down, meaning that there are people who are above you and such? depending on the culture that you are in, it is going to be more or less socially acceptable for you to think that you are at the top or the bottom of the ladder, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so already we have a little bit of, we have a lot of socialization attached to this ranking. So that's one part of that we have to think about when we think about this ranking. The other thing to think about is that young people right now have a lot of media attention around the fact that they are on their phones all the time, and that's making them unhappy, right? So with all that said, I do think young people in America are increasingly isolated because they are on their phones and not around people as much. So yes, perhaps they are more more socially isolated and less happy. All this one the reason I'm a little hesitant to sort of have a grand answer on this.
Yeah.
And by the way, I'm much more hesitant even in answering this question than I was when this data first came out, is because in the last month or two, a series of articles have come out challenging research articles have come out challenging the loneliness epidemic in the United States, and whether the data on the loneliness epidemic is really true. Because methodologically, it's a very hard thing to measure.
Yeah.
So right now, academics are kind of wondering whether we are in fact as lonely and unhappy as the data is, that the data of the last 5 or 10 years has shown that we are. And basically saying every generation we worry that the young people are lonelier and more unhappy than they have been, and that the good old days everyone was less lonely and less unhappy, you know, than they are now. So just to take all of this with a little bit of a grain of salt, and to make sure that we are not overstating things, I would say that that we should watch it, but happiness is a subjective measure. The more you try to grasp for happiness, the less happy we are. The more we look inward, and the more solipsistic and self-focused we become, the less happy we become. And so any measures that are increasingly focused on our happiness will increasingly show that we are less happy. So the fact that we as a nation, that we as a world, have begun to focus more and more on happiness and well-being, it's not surprising that those measures are showing we're becoming less happy.
Diane in Portage has something for us.
Let's go. Good.
Hi, Diane.
Hi.
What's on your
Hello.
Mind?
I have a question. I've wondered for a long time about altruism. If you do something out of doing it for someone else, so your intention is altruistic, but you receive rewards for it, is it still altruism?
It is indeed. Oh, I'm so glad you asked that question. In fact, it is so selfish altruism is still altruism, and in fact, it is in fact called sort of like sort of intelligent altruism, and so that is altruism that is to be encouraged. Just because you get benefit from it does not mean that it is not altruistic. So good for you for doing good things for others, even if you get benefit from it yourself. So that is you do not have to just sacrifice. Yes, I think it would be complete self-sacrifice if you did not get any benefit yourself.
Diane,
go forth and do good for others and get good for yourself.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, I think everybody needs to do a little bit more of that, and they would feel much better about themselves.
I agree. I agree, Diane.
Diane, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Oh, man, that was good. you can join in, too. The number to call, 800-642-1234. Love to hear from you. Or you could email us to talk at WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Thanks for listening in today on WPR News. Just a quick mention, at noon, we talked to the weather guys, Steve Ackerman and John Martin will talk about research showing winters and changing storm systems on the Great Lakes. And of course, as always, they will answer your weather questions and probably take a look at your weather photos, because we usually get a bunch of those as well as we move along. That's at noon today. But right now, we're talking about resolutions, goals, purpose-driven life with our guest, Christine Whalen, a fellow at UW-Madison Center for Healthy Minds, and the Purpose Professor at the Emory University's College of Arts and Sciences in Atlanta, Georgia. Great to have her with us. One of her books, The Big Picture, A Guide to Finding Your Purpose in Life. Questions, I hope you'll join in, or comments, or maybe an experience to share. The number's 800-642-1234, or email to talk at WPR.org. Let's take a call from Kim in Arena. Kim, thank you for calling.
Oh, well, thank you for having me.
What's on your mind?
I just wanted to offer something. When we were talking about synonyms for happiness, instantly, and mine's two words, but it's inner peace. And I'm 67, and I've been in the corporate world, and my husband and I now live on the Wisconsin River, in what was never meant to be a year-round cabin. So we have critters. We have too much iron in our water. And some of my very well-meaning friends say, how can you live like this? And that really bothered me for a couple of weeks. And I'm like, but I'm happy. I've never been happier. So, you know, I've been around the block. I'm 67, and I've been in the corporate world, and I was very happy there, but I've really never been happier than where we are now. And I guess it's just the happiness is in the eye of the beholder.
Thank you for sharing that. That's so beautiful, because it's inner peace, but it's also self-knowledge. Because what you have just described is that you know that you are at a place in life where this is what you want. And that's actually why I dislike the word happiness, because it's not a one-size-fits-all word. It really is about self-knowledge and a self-definition of, as Farrell says in that song, what happiness means to you, right? So you have defined happiness in this way of inner peace and tranquility and self-knowledge of what it means at this point in your life, and it means for you to be right where you belong right now. And so that's wonderful. I'm so glad. I'm so happy for you. Enjoy every minute of it. You've earned it. And enjoy those critters. Enjoy the peace. Go for it.
Actually, back to that happiness report, it did show that older Americans ranked 10th happiest. So relative to the young folks who were 62nd, I mean, does that really, and, you know, given the things that you mentioned about the scale, it is interesting, because these are Americans, U.S. people, young versus old. So looking at it that way and wondering, maybe there are more people like Kim. And that's the reason. Why are older Americans happier than younger Americans?
There also may be less social stigma for older Americans to say they feel like they are higher up on that ladder. Or there may be, in fact, more social encouragement for older Americans to say they are higher up on that ladder. I mean, it's a very yeah, complicated thing about where we feel that we should put ourselves on that ladder. So these questions are complicated for a whole variety of reasons. I would like to say that there are more people like Kim. I mean, it would be mm-hmm. wonderful if there are more people like that. I'm not sure that's true, but it would be great to know that it would be great to think that there are more people who have worked hard, who have earned some time to enjoy cabins and some peace and tranquility.
And I'm glad she has a radio, too.
I'm absolutely.
And a phone.
That's right.
Thanks again, Kim. Diane in Wausau, we'll go to you. Hi, Diane.
Hi. Thanks for the program. I just recently listened to a gentleman, and he was talking about that we cannot create our own happiness, that it's this vicious doom gloom cycle that we get ourselves into. And to help us learn how to become happy with ourselves and content is to look at what breaks our heart, asking ourselves, well, what breaks my heart? What causes me to be upset? And then taking action on that, and that can be your purpose. And I have a couple things that have broken my heart, and I either put my finances towards that and my volunteer, my time. But I thought that was really insightful.
Interesting. So the other way to frame that is, so that really comes around the idea of what are the ideas and causes toward which you feel like you can have the most impact and that really speak to your core values. So saying it in terms of breaking your heart says it in the negative, but you could also think of it in terms of the positive, the about which you care most, about which you are most passionate. There's sort of a saying that passion, you can take the word apart, and it's about pass the I on. But the I in passion is the lowercase I. It's not about me, but it's about passing your gift on. It's about passing the I, the thing that you care about most, on. And so the idea of giving of yourself and your values. So yes, you can think about it in terms of breaking your heart in terms of the negative, or you can think of it in terms of breaking your heart open in terms of the positive, in terms of what you care about most. So either way, that idea of putting your limited resources, and we all have limited resources, whether it's limited resources of money, of energy, of time, and spending those limited resources in keeping with your values to make a positive impact, absolutely. That's a great way of thinking about how to live your purpose and, by transition there, find happiness.
Diane, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. You know, I was thinking about you. You have written a bunch of books, a very popular book, The Big Picture, A Guide to Finding Your Purpose in Life. You came out in 2021. You released a series of 10 lectures on the subject of finding your purpose. I'm wondering how has helping other people find their purpose become your purpose?
Teaching is my professional purpose. Translating academic research into small steps programs that people can use in their everyday life is my professional purpose. It also is somewhat of my personal purpose because I have 5 kids, ages 9 through 16. And so as a teacher, I'm also a teacher as a mom. And so I spend a whole lot of my time organizing, teaching, mentoring in my personal and professional life. So, yeah, that's my purpose. My purpose is teaching, is translating, is organizing. And I live it at home. I live it at work.
Yeah. And you do talk about a purpose gap, too.
There's often a
purpose gap. And what do you mean by that?
So in the corporate world, there is a huge purpose gap. There's a statistic that was put out by McKinsey a couple years ago that found that 90% of executives, people in the C-suite, say that they have a sense of purpose in their work. 90%. But only 10% of folks working on the front lines, working as either in the factories or working in the front line of a retail store, only 10% of those employees feel like their work is purposeful. So that is a huge gap, 10% versus 90%. And that huge purpose gap, I believe we can bridge that purpose gap if we begin to talk about purpose as a verb. If we talk about purpose not as a statement that hangs in a corporate boardroom, but as something that we can do every day when we use our gifts in keeping with our values, when we actually think of purpose as small steps that we can take in our work, not just as a noun, but as a verb. And when we actually start talking to frontline workers about purpose and stop only talking to corporate executives about purpose.
Yeah, I can see where the execs are the global view of what their work is about, whereas the person on the front line, all I do is make this little cog in this widget.
Yeah, that's purposeful work too.
I know, but they don't. But they may not view it that way.
Right, but I think the reason they don't view it that way is because we've never talked about it that way. You know, when we think about how anything is built, it's built brick by brick.
Yeah.
How are our lives built? How is a wall built? How is anything built? It's built one step at a time. And if we think about a resolution, if we think about anything we do in our life, it's got to be small steps to achieve big results. And I believe purpose is very much the same. And so my passion right now, my purpose in this purpose work, is to help people see the small steps that build a life of purpose. So I'm really excited about this work because I think it can have a big impact in everybody's everyday life. And it can give people a sense of agency and credit for all the purposeful work they're already doing. So rather than another thing that we have to do, it's giving you credit for the purposeful work you do every day, Larry, on this show. So you can go to bed saying, I've done something really purposeful today. Not just, I did another day, but I've done purposeful work today.
Yeah. And I do feel that when I go to bed at night. I think about what the day was like and talking with great guests and hopefully and thinking, yeah, I think we did pretty good today.
You made a difference.
So, and you recommend a daily purpose exercise even.
I do.
Mean, is that the exercise, thinking about it? Or what?
So on my website, on ChristineWhelan.com, people can download either a free digital one. You can access a free digital daily purpose statement or a PDF where you can print it out. And it breaks it down into step-by-step exercises. I have like a Mad Libs purpose statement exercise you can do on a daily basis. And the idea is that if you break a daunting idea of a purpose statement into a small steps exercise, you can turn it into a pleasurable exploration of possibilities.
I like the sound of that. Oh, my gosh. Well, you like your work.
I really do. I am passionate about purpose.
And you seem happy, too.
I've got a lot for which to be grateful and a lot of things to be happy about.
Well, Karen and Madison emailed to say that your enthusiasm is carried on the radio, which is another medium for sharing your message. And Karen is very appreciative of your presence here. And so am I.
Well, thank you.
I want to thank you so much for spending time with us today, Christine. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you so much.
And hopefully we can, it was been 8 years or whatever.
Let's do it again before another 8 years.
Yeah.
How's that?
Oh, yeah. We got to do it more quickly, sooner than that. Christine, thanks again.
Thank you.
Christine Whalen, our guest today, fellow at the UW-Madison Center for Healthy Minds and the Purpose Professor at Emory University's College of Arts and Sciences in Atlanta, Georgia. And the one book that I kept mentioning that you might want to take a look at, The Big Picture, A Guide to Finding Your Purpose in Life. And what's your website?
ChristineWhelan.com.
ChristineWhelan.com. Coming up, we're going to take a look at weather and weather conditions with our weather guys. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News.